Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, October 29th, 2009. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. For this week, Chris Colby, editor of Brew Your Own magazine, gives us some tips and tricks on brewing in a small space. Living in an apartment, confined living quarters, are no excuse for not brewing your own beer. Well, if you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And you can follow me on Twitter, my username, basicbrewing, all one word. Also, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james. We have a Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing Video page on Facebook as well at facebook.com/basicbrewing. And fans of the show there will get occasional notices when shows like this are posted. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon, think of us and click on our associate link first. Doesn't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you the show, and we appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site as well. I have some exciting news to share with you. It's exciting to me, at least. If you go to our online shop, basicbrewingshop.com, you can see our new shirts. I came up with a fun slogan, at least I think it's fun, and commissioned award-winning designer Casey Lohman, who you've heard on this podcast, to come up with a cool graphic for the front of the shirt. The new catchphrase is, Reinheitsgebot is a four-letter word. I think it's clever. Those of you who are not familiar with the Reinheitsgebot, it is the German purity law from the 1500s that restricted brewers to barley, water, hops, and eventually yeast. Well, this new shirt is a good-natured nose thumb at conventional brewing thinking that limits brewers' creativity to confining us to those four big ingredients. So, today we can brew with those four ingredients. We can limit ourselves to those four ingredients if we want to and brew wonderful beers. But if we want to, you know, we can throw some spice and some sugar and some herbs and chocolate and coffee and wood and bark and whatever we want to into our brew pot or fermenters. And we can do so without guilt or legal repercussions. So anyway, Reinheitsgebot is a four-letter word. You can see the cool design, and Casey really did come up with, actually, she came up with four designs, and they were all cool, and we picked just this one. It is an oval with the phrase surrounding an illustration of barley and hops in the center. Looks kind of like a beer label, kind of, and the design is screen printed in chocolate brown, and we have two colors to choose from for the shirts, a Vegas gold, which you would think would be sparkly, but it's not. It's kind of a pale yellow. And prairie dust, which you would think is brown, but it's not. It's green. So to avoid confusion, there are photos on the site of the shirts. So check those out on basicbrewingshop.com. And thanks again to Casey for the awesome work. Also, while I'm shamelessly promoting, I have the printer's proof of the 2010 Brewer's Logbook. And Steve did an excellent job. Steve Wilkes did an excellent job laying it out, designing it once again. This year's cover features a field of barley. And I hope to have those up on the shop by late this week or early next week. The printer promises that we'll have those on Monday, so look out for those as well. Also this week, in the free department, you don't have to pay for this, look for a new episode of Basic Brewing Video, where we use a truly scary ingredient in the mash tun to celebrate Halloween. It is a real monster mash. And speaking of monsters, congratulations to Rock Arts Brewery on their recent win against the Monster Energy Drink people. If you have been following me on Twitter and Facebook, you can you know that I've been tweeting and Facebooking, trying to drum up a little bit of support on that, along with thousands and thousands of other people. And cheers to all the beer lovers out there who targeted their attention toward the issue and helped David defeat Goliath. I think it was definitely a good group effort. And for those of you who don't know the controversy, Rock Arts Brewery had their beer Vermonster. And the Monster Energy Drink people had a little problem with that name. But it was all worked out in the end. So, excellent. Congratulations, everybody. Let's dip into the mailbag since I didn't have time last week. Ben from Newcastle, Australia writes in, worried about a stuck fermentation, as many brewers are. He says, I've done an all-extract brew as follows. Apologize for the measurements. I'm from Australia. You shouldn't apologize. The rest of the world is on the metric system. We're the ones that are wacky. Anyway, here's the recipe. 3.26 kilograms light dry malt extract. 410 grams crystal medium grain steeping. 18 grams pilgrim at 60 minutes. 16 grams target at 60. 10 grams EKG at 10 minutes. And a Safale S04 yeast. He says it makes, Ben says it made 23 liters with an original gravity of 1.060 or 1060. Ben says was fermenting nice and steady around 18 degrees for 1 week until the temperature decreased to around 15 to 16 degrees Celsius and it slowed right down. Then I did some gentle agitation and wrapped it in towels and brought it into the lounge room, which is a warmer ambient temperature where it sat for another week. I checked the hydrometer and it said 1018. I decided it may be a stalled fermentation and racked it to secondary to see if it would rouse the yeast back into fermenting mode. It's now been in the secondary for 2 weeks and has dropped to 1016. I've also talked to the homebrew shop owner, and he suggested I pitch some more yeast, which I did a few days ago. Hasn't developed any real croizen, just some bubbles are sitting on top. Anyway, it hasn't dropped any further. It tastes great. Well, those last three words are important. It tastes great. Doesn't taste too sweet. So, that's just me talking. So Ben says, so sorry for my long-winded story. It's just that I would hate to bottle and end up with bombs sitting in my spare room. Girlfriend would bloody kill me. Probably figuratively and literally. Yeah, Ben, you don't want bottle bombs for sure, whether you've got a girlfriend or not. But if you've come down from 1060 to 1016, that's an apparent attenuation of 73%. And by the way, to get your apparent attenuation, you subtract 16, your final gravity, from 60, your original gravity, and you get 44. And you divide by your original gravity, 60, and you get 73%. You actually get 0.73, but that's 73%. Depending on the fermentability of your extract, that may be pretty good. Some extracts are more fermentable than others, but coming down from 1060 to 1016, I would think is pretty good. What I would do is go ahead and bottle and check your bottles frequently afterwards, you know, after a few days. Drink one frequently to see where the carbonation is. If they start to get way too over-carbonated, then you may be headed for bottle bombs, and you can stick them in the fridge or put them on ice and have a party. Solve that problem right there. Anyway, I think you'll be okay. Wouldn't worry about it. It's always good to hear from our friends down under, especially since we were having some local internet service provider issues not too long ago, and we were kind of cut off from the world outside the U.S. for a little bit there. But I hope everything is back to normal. If not, let me know. Let me know if you can't hear me. One more. This is from Scott in St. Mary's, Georgia. My question today involves what type of equipment to use to filter the grain in my round 5-gallon igloo cooler mash tun. I already have a stainless steel ball valve and bazooka screen from a 3-gallon partial mash cooler that MidwestSupplies.com sells. Should I go ahead and buy a 9-inch round stainless steel false bottom to use instead or stick with a bazooka screen? What about one of those PVC pipe setups with the slots cut in them? Is one setup more efficient at extracting wort than the other? Does any of the setups limit the type of sparging I can do? This is one of those questions that likely spark a bit of debate among the home brewing community out there. I started out with a plastic false bottom in my 10-gallon cylindrical cooler and got several stuck sparges because the grain kept getting under the false bottom and clogging up the pipes. And there's nothing more frustrating than a stuck sparge or stuck lauter. But anyway, I switched to a stainless steel hose braid that I got from a toilet hose, essentially, and fixed up myself. And I haven't had any stuck sparges since, and I'm pretty happy with my efficiency. Now, I almost always do batch sparging, so a well-functioning false bottom probably wouldn't gain me any efficiency. And for those who are new to all grain, by the way, when we talk about efficiency, we're talking about the amount of sugars we're able to pull out of the grain at the end of the mash rest. More sugar equals a higher efficiency and a higher gravity of wort, which makes sense. Now, if you fly sparge or add water slowly in a continuous fashion when you're draining the wort from the mash, having an even pull from throughout all areas of the mash is essential because you're trying to rinse the grain evenly. You want the water to go evenly through all of the grain to get all of the sugar out, no matter where that sugar is. In that case, a hose braid would lead to more channeling of the water and leave more sugar in some parts of the mash tun than would a false bottom, which theoretically draws from evenly across the bottom of the mash. So that's in theory. So in a nutshell, Scott, in my opinion, if you are batch sparging, go with your bazooka screen from the old setup. But if you plan on fly sparging, go with a false bottom. Simple, seems to be, to me. If you've got another opinion, though, or if you have more data to share, drop me a line at james@basicbrewing.com or use the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Okay, let's get small with Chris Colby of Brew Your Own Magazine. Well, Chris Colby, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Hey, James. Thanks for having me on.
We are going to think small today. As happens a lot of times when we talk, I get a couple of emails on topics that are, if not exactly, they are close to the topics that are coming up in the next issue of Brew Your Own magazine. And I got a couple of emails lately from homebrewers or people who wanted to get into home brewing but live in apartments or small spaces. And I guess when you live in an apartment, you don't necessarily have access to the out-of-doors, so you can't have a propane burner and brew a big batch of beer out on the patio or outside. And you don't have room for an extra refrigerator, so you can't, like, have a kegerator, or you can't ferment in a controlled temperature space. There are just a lot of constraints with a small space that you have to deal with when home brewing, but that doesn't mean it's impossible, right?
Right.
Well, thanks for joining. Can you elaborate?
Yes, I can. Yeah, well, there's we interviewed a variety of people who live in sort of smaller quarters. A lot of them people in big cities or whatever. And there's basically two solutions to trying to brew in a small space. One of them kind of obvious as just to scale down. If you live in a small, student apartment, you've likely got, a stove that's probably underpowered compared to most home stoves. You probably got a refrigerator that's kind of teeny weeny. So, scaling down to something that you could, to brewery equipment that doesn't take up so much room and that you can brew with fairly easily. That's one option. The second option is sort of to go vertical, and that means just, any apartment or whatever, where space is limited, if you can stack your brewing vessels one on top of the other, build some sort of system that way, it doesn't take up so much room, it takes up the same amount of space, but it's space that's not really being used for anything.
That's right. If you can't go sideways, go up. And there are a couple of solutions. One is Bob Neihart, I guess, from Spring Lake Park, Minnesota, has a space in his basement. I think all the space he has is like 5 feet by 5 feet or something like that, and he has built I believe it's a 5-gallon system, all grain, vertically on this rack. And so it's a pretty nifty setup.
Yeah, he's got a steel rack, and he's got 2 10-gallon, GOTT coolers or Rubbermaid or you know, whoever manufactured them. And, you know, one serves as a hot liquor tank. The other serves as the, you know, mash and louder ton. And given that they're stacked, you know, they don't take up that much room. And he's got, you know, some other stuff on board there too, like he's got a pump and a water filter, and nice little system and nice way of utilizing a small space.
Now, also, if you don't want to go completely high tech like he did, you can do what Rich Weaver in Casper, Wyoming did, and he's basically got a cheap system that he built for, I think it's at like $15 or something like that, which is he used some shelving units that he basically stacks on his kitchen counter to achieve something similar. So again, if you've got the space to go up, you can go up instead of going out and have the same effect.
Yeah, Rich's system is really pretty much a lot like mine was when I was a student. You use buckets and carboys and stuff that are cheap, and you know, he's got a on the top shelf, you know, you keep the hot liquor tank, and then the shelf below that, he's got it looks like he's got using a bucket as a mash tun, which I did for a while. And you know, you just like you say, you know, your space above your stovetop really maybe doesn't get a lot of use, and if you design your system that way, it can.
Of course, you got to be careful that if you're stacking large quantities of water on top of something, that it's stable, and especially if you're stacking large quantities of heated water vertically, you need to make sure that stuff's not going to tump over on you, as we say here in the South.
Yeah, I when I was brewing, I did something similar. I had the my hot liquor tank would sit, which was just the bottling bucket, would sit on top of the refrigerator, and then the line actually went sort of kitty corner across my kitchen over to the just the bench there where the mash louder tun was. And it was always sort of a hazard because there was this, you know, tube just hanging down through the middle of my kitchen. And if you ran into it, you would, you know, would pull the hot liquor tank down on top of you. So, yeah, you've got to, especially when you got tubing connecting stuff that you could be tangled up in, you've got to watch out.
Now, you have a nice sidebar in this article. And the article was written by Terry Badman.
Terry Badman. He's a intern for BYO right now.
He did a good job.
Yeah,
And your sidebar talks about you're starting out in brewing when you were a student in Boston, and you had a small space. So how did you cope, and how would you have changed your brewing methods if you had to do it over again?
Well, I coped by sort of not coping. I just I just had all the stuff I needed for a 5-gallon brewery, and I just sort of when it came to having to heat up the wort and not having a powerful enough stove, I just, you know, sat there and waited and waited and waited for it to heat up. And, you know, when I went to cool stuff down, prior to getting a wort chiller, I just, you know, let stuff sit in the bathtub and let, you know, it cool and cool and cool. And I really wish I'd sort of thought of this like much earlier than this article, because back then in Boston, it would have helped me a lot if I would have thought, hey, I can make 3 gallons on my stove, get a nice rolling boil, you know, I can cool it in my sink faster. And, you know, I was brewing a lot at the time anyway, so it would just mean, you know, less money per batch, essentially. And I put a little sidebar in the article about if you wanted to make just a nice little three gallon system from just, you know, the sort of everyday stuff you can buy at a homebrew store, you know, what you could do that way. And what are, also just mentioned a couple of little advantages to it.
So you can start off with a smaller mash tun, a 5 gallon mash tun instead of a 10 gallon mash tun, which is cheaper. I mean, the it seems like to me when I was pricing like Rubbermaid coolers when I was first going into all grain, it seems like the 10 gallon mash tuns were like more than twice as expensive as the 5 gallons anyway.
Yeah, I haven't looked at the prices on those recently, but you know. The 5 gallon, you know, like Rubbermaid one, maybe they make, you know, just tons and tons more of that size, and so it's more economical for them or whatever. But that's excellent for, if you're doing 3 gallon batches, that's excellent for a mash tun. You can brew, you know, 3 gallons up to, you know, at least 1080 if you're getting, you know, marginally decent efficiency. You know, and another option for a mash tun is to use, you can buy these little plastic false bottoms and you can use your bottling bucket as a mash tun, you know, and then you're reducing the amount of, you know, sort of vessels you need because you're not going to be using the bottling bucket on the same day or using the mash tun,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, at least with the same batch. Yeah, so either of those would work, you know, great as a little, as a mash tun for a 3 gallon size batch. And also a nice thing about that is that, you know, with the bucket, you could use the false bottom. You could probably also get one for the cooler. But really, at that scale, all you need is a big grain bag, and you can just use the cooler or bottling bucket as is. You know, you're not going to lose that much efficiency by not having a, you know, a manifold or a false bottom or whatever. Just put the grains in the bag, and you know you can sparge just right on top of the grain bag like you normally would, and just the bag is going to be enough of a sort of, you know, buffer to keep, you know, keep grain bits out of your brewing.
And you can follow the example of the Australians and the New Zealanders and do brew in a bag.
Yeah, you could do something like that too.
Which I've tried and it worked well for me. So, and the people I've talked to swear by it. So that's one fewer container that you'd have to deal with. But when you're boiling 3 gallons or 4 gallons, I guess, if you want to start with a larger pre-boil volume, you don't have to have as big a container, and your smaller stove will be able to handle getting up to boil in a reasonable amount of time and getting a more vigorous boil, which may have a good impact on the quality of your beer as well.
Yeah, boiling a smaller amount, you know, if your heating source is underpowered, you know, scaling down your amount to the point where you get a vigorous boil is a good thing. And also talking about the pricing and scale differences. If you look at stainless steel pots, as long as you're sort of in the kitchen usable range, they're pretty cheap. But once you start scaling up into, you know, pots that you are more useful for home brewing, the prices tend to go up pretty quick just because they're not, you know, the average, you know, person doesn't have any use for a 10-gallon stainless pot or a 20-gallon, you know. So you can pick up, you know, you can go to any sort of restaurant, or not restaurant store, but it could be that, or just any, you know, kitchen supply store and get a 5 gallon stainless pot for, I don't know, they're really cheap. They're like $35, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if, you know, you get a 10 gallon pot, then you're looking at, you know, a lot more than 70, you know, which would be double the price of the five or whatever.
Right.
And so yeah, get a, you know, you can find some nice little stainless pots cheap.
And then for fermenters, you can, use a standard 5 gallon carboy because
sure.
you're going to have enough headspace in there, and those are cheaper than the 6.5 gallon that you usually use for full, quote unquote, full 5 gallon batches.
Yeah, you can. I mean, you've got a lot of different options for fermenters. You've got, you know, the 5 gallon carboy would work just fine, and you could, you know, whatever you use for your primary, you could. Also use a 3 gallon carboy as the secondary if you're doing secondaries. There's also, if you just look around at, you know, pretty much any big box store, you know, Home Depot or Lowe's or all those places, a lot of those places sell 5 gallon food grade buckets, you know, which are, when you go to homebrew stores, they're usually the, you know, the 7 or 8 gallon, you know, homebrew buckets. that work well with 5 gallon sizes. But for a 5 gallon batch, you could easily do a 5 gallon bucket as your primary, and mm-hmm. you know, all you really need to do is drill the top to put in a little grommet and a fermentation lock.
And what about packaging? I mean, if you've got an apartment and you either don't have space for an extra refrigerator or you're not allowed by the landlord to have an extra refrigerator, what are your options?
Yeah, well, this is the part that I'd really wish I'd figured out, because for a while in Boston, I tried to have, you know, I bought a kegging system and I tried to have a, you know, 5 gallon corny keg set up in my kitchen refrigerator. You know, the problem with that is that you're going to have no food, you know, in your fridge, which isn't a good thing. And so if you're brewing 3 gallon batches, you can, of course, just bottle it normally. But there are a few options for, using fewer vessels and having them be things that, you know, are small enough that you can probably fit in your fridge if it's a priority. And those include, they make those little 5 liter mini kegs. The little tap-a-draft system, which uses sort of like, they look like big soda bottles. They're like 6 liter, soda bottles.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also something called a party pig, you know, that holds like a little over 2 gallons, and you could use a couple of those if you wanted to. And, you know, beyond that, depending on how much beer you're going to drink at a time, there are bigger bottle sizes too that work nice. If you're brewing a small batch, you could make, you know, if you got some 1 liter flip tops, you'd only have to fill 11 of them, which, you know, really isn't that much.
Mm. But on the other hand, you know, ramen noodles don't have to be refrigerated.
No.
And when I was a college student, I didn't have much much food in the fridge anyway. So you're talking about your college days. Not that everybody who lives in an apartment is in college, because I was there after college as well. Another example of a solution is something like a no-boil ingredient kit.
Yeah, one of the things, if you want to really, especially if you just want to crank out, you know, sort of a decent beer and you don't want to fuss along, you know, with a bunch of stuff, there's a lot of kits where you just heat them up to like 160, you know, pasteurization temp, hold them there for a little while, cool them down, and then ferment them. And, you know, for a lot of homebrewers, that's not really going to be that exciting of an option, because you're not doing anything with the recipe. You're conducting a fermentation, but people like to, you know, like boil their own hops and then steep their own grains and all that. So, but, you know, it is an option if you're, you know, just trying to produce beer.
Yeah, you give up a lot of the creativity and the customization of your recipes when you just do one of those either canned kits or if you go to something like a Mr. Beer, they do have different recipes and such. And a lot of people do homebrew with Mr. Beer. Steve and I played with a couple of Mr. Beer kits. And our friends who liked light beers liked what liked at least the first batch that came with the kit. But again, you know, the level of customization was not to our taste. I do, however, I don't know if you've seen the little plastic keg fermenter things that come with a Mr. Beer kit?
Yeah, I think I've seen them.
But actually, I think they're kind of nifty. And for small batches, I might I've always thought about doing, you know, a small batch all-grain beer and fermenting in the Mr. Beer keg thing just to see how it would work. It's got a built-in spigot. It doesn't need an airlock because there's like a hole somehow in the lid there. And if you go to their website, they're only like $10. So, you know, what the heck? So anyway, that may be another suggestion on how you can use how you can brew beer in a small space is look for alternative solutions that you might have overlooked before. Ray Snyder is a homebrewer who takes this to the extreme, sort of. He brews in 1 gallon batches and says that he comes out with 11 kind of small bottles of beer, and he enjoys the process. He enjoys being able to brew often and experiment with ingredients and experiment with different methods and such. So if you really want to take it to the micro level, you can brew as little as a 6-pack at a time in your small space.
Sure. I mean, it all just depends on what you want to do. You know, a lot of homebrewers, you grow up homebrewing with, 5 gallon being, sort of quote unquote the batch size, and it's a nice batch size. It works well with a lot of, a lot of things that homebrewers have sort of co-opted into brewing. Like, there's, carboys, that were available for other reasons, are right around that size. Corny kegs, which were, originally for soda, are 5 gallons. And so, it's a nice batch size. It works really well. But for, there are all kinds of brewers with all kinds of, the different space issues. They've got, different size refrigerators, how much they can be cellaring at one time. And just, people drink different amounts of beer too. Some, I don't tend to have a lot of problems with having a lot of beer on hand, but, some people might. And, it's just, different batch sizes are something for people to think about. One thing I hope to do in one of the upcoming issues too is do a large scale brewing, because, I think a lot of people would be interested in that too. Mm-hmm. What if you do have the room, and what if you do, especially what if, there's, a couple styles you brew and you really like them and would like to brew, a 15 or a 30 or a 50 gallon batch of that, so yeah, I mean, that's one of the really neat things about homebrewing is just the number of different, ways people approach it, the number of different, ways people have adapted all sorts of, equipment, to brew in.
Yeah, once you get your mind around that five gallon increments aren't the law, then you can kind of customize your brewing method to whatever you want to do. One thing that when I talk about small batches, one question that people always bring up first of all is, well, I don't want to go to, for the same amount of time and trouble, I can come up with 10 gallons of beer instead of, one.
Right.
That's not necessarily true, because an all grain brew day for me, when I'm doing like a test 6-pack or a, like my small batch barley wine that I do every year, I can cut my brew day down by at least a third by going small batch, because it doesn't take long for, say, a gallon and a half to come up to boil on the stove, but it takes quite a bit longer for, 5 or 6.5 or 10 or whatever to come up, even with a propane burner outside. So bringing the wort up to temperature and cooling the wort down after boiling are two time periods that can be shrunk when you either change your volume or change your heating method and cooling method as well.
Yeah, there are, in any brewing day, there are sort of fixed time constraints. The length of your boil is not going to change with your batch size, probably. The, length of your mash if you're doing an all-grain beer. But other things, like you say, heating, cooling, a lot of times also just cleaning. If all your equipment is just smaller, you got less, less surface area to clean.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a, there's maybe a slight time constraint. I mean, or benefit to going smaller. I mean, I very definitely, and one of the reasons I put the little sidebar in was when I brew smaller batches, I very definitely like to think about saving time at packaging. If you, if I brew 3 gallons, which I do occasionally for beers that I'm just trying out the first time sometimes, or something that has like an expensive ingredient and I don't necessarily want to, spend enough to make a full 5-gallon batch. I like to find ways to just package it quickly. And I was lucky enough, actually, my homebrew shop for a while had 3-gallon corny kegs that they found used somewhere. And I got a few of those, and those are really nice because then it's just essentially like kegging, you know, at a 5-gallon scale. So yeah, it's nice when you brew smaller. If you think about if you're going to do it consistently, think about ways to do it really efficiently. Because there's just, you know, if you do a 3-gallon bottling day where you just do, you know, the standard bottling bucket and all that. You know, it's a little bit shorter because you're filling less bottles and cleaning less bottles, but it is, you know, it is still quite a while to get all this stuff clean, to get it, you know, the bottles filled and then capped.
Now, one thing about brewing with a challenging space, it's kind of like brewing with a challenging budget in that it can be constrictive, you know, it can be restrictive, but it can also help you to kind of think out of the box and come up with better solutions for situations that you wouldn't have thought of if you had had all the space and all the brewing equipment in the world. You know what I mean? When I first started out in video production, you know, I worked at little stations here in Northwest Arkansas, and we didn't have much of a budget for equipment and such, so we kind of had to get more creative in putting our stories together and such than if we had had a photographer to go along with this, or if we'd had, you know, more expensive lighting equipment or such as that. So I kind of felt after coming through that that I was better prepared to be a better video producer having dealt with constraints than if I had started out with no challenges at all. Does that make sense?
Sure. Yeah. And I mean, homebrewing seems to be, you know, to me at least, a great example about people sort of overcoming almost any level of, you know, budgetary challenges to brew. I mean, you look at the system that some people have cobbled together, you know, like Rich Weaver in this story, you know, he says he got a lot of it donated, which helps, but, you know, he spent like maybe $15 on this entire setup. It's like, you know, come on, that's anybody can afford that, you know? And, yeah, I think, you know, and also, yeah, any kind of constraint you have on your brewing where, you know, you don't have, you know, like a full, nice, you know, commercially produced system for you, you know, it's going to force you to think, like, what are the points in the brewing process that, you know, that I can't compromise on? You know, like, you know, I would say getting a nice, full rolling boil is something that everyone should shoot for. You know, certainly being able to pitch enough yeast is something you should shoot for. And, aeration and steady fermentation temperatures. And, you know, from there, you can think about things, well, what doesn't matter that much?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, like, you know, for me, one thing would be if I was really forced into it, if I, you know, had to have some sort of mash tun that didn't really hold mash temperatures that steady, I wouldn't worry too much about that because I know that that's not going to be a big deal. Just by trial and error, you can learn. You know, you'd learn the rate of heat loss, so you'd know where to mash in so that you mash, you know, your mash finished where you wanted to, and it wouldn't be that horrendously, you know, big a deal. Whereas, you know, if you couldn't bring your wort to a decent boil, that's going to be, you know, a much bigger deal that's going to show through in your beer.
Yeah, it's you mentioned pitching yeast, doing a smaller batch, you can more easily pitch an adequate amount of yeast with a smaller batch than you can, you know, for, say, a 10-gallon batch or something. So there's another advantage with the small grain or the small batch brewing as well.
Definitely. For especially if you're picking 3 gallons, which is a nice size because there's 3-gallon carboys, there's, you know, 5-gallon kettles and stuff like that. 3 gallons is a great size because for most average strength ales, you can pitch like one tube of White Labs or one smack pack of Y yeast, and you're, you know, right in the ballpark of the optimal level of a yeast count, and, you know, you don't have to make a yeast starter.
Mm.
So, and that's, you know, for me, that's a big time constraint because I make a yeast starter with every single batch that I do, you know, with the exception of 3-gallon ones. So,
and that gives you the freedom to not plan ahead. If you found yourself with not a lot to do on the weekend or something, and you have the ingredients on hand, you all of a sudden have the time to brew. If you don't have a starter, you kind of have to make do. But if you don't need a starter, you can go ahead and brew.
Sure.
Now, there's also an article, a second article, kind of going along the lines of this, and it's by Jeff Karpinski, and he's built a countertop all-grain brewing system that's pretty clever, and it's based on Lonnie McAllister's Brutus 20 design, which was featured in a previous issue of the magazine. But Jeff's system fits on his countertop, and it is a 3-gallon system, right?
Yeah. And yeah, actually, we had featured Lonnie's Brutus 10 system earlier. The Brutus 20 was like a sort of an experiment of him of brewing with a 2-vessel system instead of 3-vessel system. But yeah, Jeff Karpinski's takes that and moves it indoors, and it's an all-electric brewery, so there's no you don't have to worry about running a propane burner or any sort of thing like that inside. And it's a full sort of semi-automatic brewing system. I mean, it checks the mash temperature, and during the recirculation, it keeps holds your mash temperature constant. And it's a pretty clever idea, and it's all built out of little stuff that you could find at Home Depot or Lowe's or any Ace Hardware or any of those places.
Yeah, it's got a recirculating pump. It's got a heated brew kettle with a water heater element in it. Mm-hmm. He recirculates the mash water through the mash tun, which sits on top of this bucket that's got a counterflow chiller in it. It's really a cool system, and I don't want to get into detail on the system, but I did want to point that out, that is a really clever and small system.
Yeah, it's interesting in that it shows not only it's a neat setup, based on Lonnie Mack's idea of scaling down to 2 vessels and then the sort of the modifications to your procedure you need to do that way, but and then he just adapted it to something that just sits on your countertop at home. So yeah, it's a pretty cool system, I thought.
Yeah, and I tuned in. I think Jeff did a live brew session on one of the streaming video channels one Saturday.
Yeah.
And I tuned in just as he started the mash rest. So not as interesting as it was like, okay, and now it's time to let the mash rest for 60 minutes. I was like, oh, that's not nearly as interesting as the parts before and after.
Yeah, watching mash rest, that's good television.
So I had other things to do, so I kind of missed out on that. So maybe he'll tweet again when he does that again. Maybe I can retweet it out there so that everybody can watch the whole thing work, which is pretty cool. He had a camera hanging over the counter, so you were looking straight down on the kitchen counter. Pretty cool.
Yeah, he's apparently got a few people have built versions of his system, the 3-gallon. And he's got a website, and he's told me he's interested, that people have some interest to find him and send him an email, and he'd be happy to send to answer questions.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, it's a neat little system.
So the bottom line of all this conversation is that if you live in a small space, if you live in an apartment, if you live in somebody's basement or wherever you live, there's no excuse not to brew.
Right. There's, there are several, for the kind of circumstances you're likely to find yourself in an apartment, there are several good reasons to brew smaller, increase boil vigor, decrease cooling time, just, space. And, the only downside that you have to swallow is less beer. You still got a brew day, which might be slightly shorter than a full brew day, but you're ending up with you know, 3 gallons or a gallon when you could be ending up with, you know, 5 or 10 or 15.
But you're still brewing.
You're still brewing.
All right, Chris. This has been fun again. I think I'll go have a small beer.
Okay.
Thanks, Chris.
Talk to you later, James.
Well, thanks again to Chris. You can read the articles we talked about in the current issue of Brew Your Own magazine. If you click on the BYO ad on basicbrewing.com, you can get a free issue of the magazine. And if you decide to subscribe, you'll be helping to support this podcast. Well, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. You can check out our homebrewing DVDs on our website, Introduction to Extract Homebrewing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. We've got combo deals to save you a couple bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time. Or you can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Don't forget our new shirts. Reinheitsgebot is a four-letter word. Check those out at our website, basicbrewingshop.com. And the Brewer's Logbooks are coming out very soon. 2010 Brewer's Logbooks. All of this makes a great Christmas gift. I get shameless around this time of year. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that also make wonderful Christmas gifts that were purchased through the link are Garmin eTrex Venture HC GPS receiver. Cool. Our family's just discovered geocaching recently. That's a fun thing to do. And alcohol car conversion. That sounds cool as well. Thanks again, everybody. Remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. And we appreciate your support. And also, don't forget that you can join the American Homebrewers Association and BYO Magazine. You can get a subscription there through our associate link as well. That's all. Until next week, and that's all. All the shameless promoting for this week. Until then, thanks for listening. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by our buddy Kelly Dotson down in Austin. Well, that was kind of a not-so-shameless promotion of Kelly. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. Another promotion. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.